You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation, brought to you by Go Wild. Go Wild is the fastest growing social media app that is dedicated directly to the outdoor enthusiasts. Whether you love hunting, fishing, camping, hiking, anything that has to do with the outdoors, you are going to love the Go Wild app. It allows you to document your adventures, document your hunts, show your pictures, log time, and there's a different way of scoring your adventures. Not necessarily by the size of the fish or the size of the antlers. It's about the overall experience. So for more information, go download the Go Wild app today or visit timetogowild.com.
Welcome back to the Rookies in the Backcountry podcast. I appreciate everybody coming back and listening. It's always good to get downloads and get listeners and, of course, get good positive feedback. So thanks for everybody that listens, and make sure you share this podcast with your friends or people that you know that might be looking at getting into some backcountry hunting. Hopefully there's good information getting put out. I'm your host, Chad Riker, so thanks for listening. Couple of things up front here. I think you guys have all been pretty well informed about the Hunter Story giveaway. I just wanted to remind everybody to send me in your hunting stories, whether it be archery or rifle hunting, whichever it is. I've got a prize package for one archery hunter and one rifle hunter. That prize package, of course, includes Vortex Viper HD 10x42s. I've got a premium membership to Onyx Maps. Also have a $250 gift card to Go Hunt in their store. And then today's guest, who's Derek Depew, each winner will get a box from the Mountain Hunter Box Club. And then I recently added a few more items from Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. So BHA was kind enough to donate a few products, a few items to the giveaway. I've got a water bottle, a public landowner water bottle, their fluorescent green one that's really cool. A public landowner baseball cap, and then a Keep Public Lands public sticker also. So some really, really cool stuff from BHA. And then, of course, all the other stuff we talked about. So really good giveaway. Jump over to backcountryrookies.com. And all the rules and everything that you need to know about the giveaway is listed over there. The deadlines and dates and all that stuff. So jump over there, backcountryrookies.com. Look into it. And send me your stories. I've got a ton of archery stories. Got a lot of those already sorted out since we're toward the end of season. And I've got several rifle stories already, but I really want to get some more. I want you guys to start sending them in. So send me those stories. With that being said, I think I'm ready to, let's jump into the show. Let's get it going with Derek here.
They have a special guest on. Not only is he a guest, and he's a backcountry rookie himself, but he's also, over the last few months, become a pretty good friend of mine. So this is going to be a lot of fun. Today I've got Derek Depew. Like I said, he's a backcountry hunter himself, but he is also the owner and operator of the Mountain Hunter Box, which is a up and coming. And I'll let Derek touch on this, but if I'm not mistaken, Derek, what was the award that you got?
Yeah, so I didn't even know that it was something going on. It wasn't really a award. A website that is based on subscription companies did a write-up about outdoor subscription boxes. And it just so happened I was, you know, every once in a while you check your website to make sure everything's functioning properly. So I Googled the website and an ad popped up and I thought, what's this? And when I opened it up, it showed me his number one outdoor subscription box on the article. So it's pretty cool.
Totally deserved. So I've been getting the Mountain Hunter box now for, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 months. And every time I get a box in the mail, I'm completely surprised by the quality of products that are in there. And Derek's going to talk about that in a minute. So I'm not going to beat it to death. I'll let him beat it to death. but one other point that I wanted to make is that Derek is also donating a couple of boxes to the giveaway that we have, that I have going on for the hunting story. And he's given away an archery box and a rifle hunter box. So first off, thank you for that, Derek, by donating those boxes. I think those are both really cool. And it certainly fit the bill since we're giving a prize to an archery hunter and a rifle hunter. So
sure.
Thank you for that. And with that, we'll just talk about the box for a little while. So
okay.
If you could touch on the idea of it and the background of it, kind of where it all came from, where it all started.
Sure. So it all started, I'm actually a police officer full time. And I was injured on the job, laid up on the couch, and sitting around really wasn't something for me. I have to keep myself busy or I'll go bonkers. So I decided that maybe I should start an online company with zero online company experience. So it all stemmed from, it started there. And then, I thought, talking with my wife, I'd really like to do something hunting based and something that I'm passionate about. And, it just so happened that I was in the middle of the series, The Land of the Free, with, DRO, watching them. And I was pretty shocked because, growing up, all that was just a dream. You're going to go elk hunting out west. That's something you got to have a lot of money to do that. And so watching that, I just started getting this idea. So I started doing research. I bought books. I got online. And in doing this, I learned a lot. There are a lot of guys out there who have a lot of questions about gear and items and things like that. So I thought, what would be a better idea than this? Because I had come across another subscription company that gets out hunting stuff. And I thought, what better way, to get involved in this than, the best thing is I get to test a lot of this gear out before I put it in the box. And I'm not, I don't want to send anything out that's not quality. So I make sure that I at least get it in my hands first. But the good thing about it is, you get the box, it, comes to your door every month and whatever's in there, I can promise you it's not going to be just something thrown in the box. There's going to be thought behind it. But anyway.
That's something that I did want to touch on too, is that I've gotten boxes in the past that's exactly what it is. You're absolutely right. It's just like they reached out, somebody got a whole bunch of products and they threw it all in a box. And then when you get it, it makes no sense. And there's no real rhyme or reason to what it's all supposed to. It's all great products. But there's no reason for them to all be together. They're really sure. Kind of unusable. So.
Sure. And so after seeing all these people, like, what should I use for this? What should I do for this? How should I use this? What kind of this should I use? This whatever, knives, game bags, whatever. And the more research I was doing, the more I was finding out that there's a lot of less desirable items, I guess, items that come from companies and I was doing more research on why these products are not as good or why, guys aren't wanting to use this over that. So that's kind of where it stemmed from. I thought if I can get quality products in the box, get into these guys' hands, especially guys that are just starting out. I know a lot of guys that do this, they got their pack dialed in to the ounce and adding extras. But a lot of the stuff too that I send out are not just extras, but might even be not replacing, but like a refill, extra stuff that they might use or even replacing. Some guys might be used to this type of knife and I sent them out this last box we had. I sent out the Outdoor Edge replaceable blade, 3-inch. They're new knives. The one they had was a 3.5, but they went with the 3-inch. It's a little smaller. It is lighter. I like the knife, but so these guys are getting this knife and maybe that's something they may want to use and stick with. So that's the best part about it is you don't know what you're going to get, but when you get it, you try it out. Maybe you don't. But the good thing is if you don't, the stuff that you're getting, you could probably turn around and toss it back online and sell it. And you're going to get more than your money back for it. So it's really a win-win.
Yeah, agreed. I haven't gotten a box yet that I didn't think that exactly that same thing. Like I open it up, I look through it, I say, man, this is really good stuff. Like, for example, that Outdoor Edge box, that thing was killer. The Outdoor Edge was in there. It came with extra blades. It was that new model of Outdoor Edge, so super awesome. You had another box that was really, really cool that I think it was one of the first ones that I got. And it came with breakfast coffee, MSR Pocket Rocket 2, which is phenomenal that thing was in that box. I mean, that's a really, really good stove. And I've since done a couple of tests and I've made a couple of videos on it that will be up on YouTube pretty soon. But it's just good stuff. And that, you know, I think that we've hammered that home, but it is really, really good stuff. And then it's well thought out. And so that was another question that I had was, your stuff is themed together, sort of like I was talking about the one that came with the pocket rocket. It came with a burner. It came with a set of Strike Anywhere matches, I believe, from Zippo.
Yeah.
And it had the coffee with it and a breakfast bar. So it was almost like it was a whole package kit that was ready to go to take into the backcountry and cook up your breakfast and your coffee and everything that you needed. So I thought that was really cool. Where did the idea for the themes come from?
So some of the boxes have the themes that are not related to the outdoors. And I think there is another, I think the Hunt Vault, I believe, is the one that does it. They have a theme-based thing as well. And the reason behind that is I felt a lot of guys want to know what's in the box before they get it. And they don't want to put forth that much money. They don't want to put forth any money if they don't have an idea of what they're getting. And especially for a newer company like us, I don't have a year's worth of products shown on the website where guys go, okay, this is a good pattern. No, it's only a few months. We're only 6 months into this or whatever it is. And I knew month one and two, before the boxes, you know, shipped, I put out there what was in the boxes. I wanted everybody to know what they were going to be getting. So they had an idea that, you know, they're not getting junk. It's going to be decent stuff. Let's give it a shot, you know. So I wanted to put that out there for them and kind of give them a feel for what's going to be coming. So after month two, I think it was in the middle of month three, I decided I wasn't going to put out any products. I was just going to give the companies of the products that were in the box. And then after month three, I decided that that's going to be when we're going to change over and just do, I'm not telling you what's in the box. I'm going to give you a theme so you have an idea of the type of thing that's going to come in the mail or come in the box and then go from there. You know, you can decide if that's something you want. And the best part is too, is at any time, let's say you purchase a monthly subscription and you hear a theme. Like, let's say you don't gun hunt and you're just a non-stop bow hunter. You don't want anything, you know, you have no interest in gun hunting. And you know that this month coming up is going to be a rifle box. So the one that's going to be shipping here in a few days is a rifle box. It's for rifle hunters. So the bow hunters out there that don't rifle hunt can go on there, just sign in and skip this month's box. So they won't be charged for this month. And they'll just resume the following month. Or maybe bills are tied at home and you don't have the extra money for this next month's box, put it on hold. You can put it on hold for 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, whatever you want to do, and then just resume again when you're ready to pick it back up. So
sounds pretty user friendly too. Just jump up on the website and do what you need to do, whether it be hold it, ship it, choose that monthly box that you want.
And another thing too, like I've had guys email me or shoot me a message on Instagram or Facebook and say, look, I'm going to be out of town during this time and I'm afraid that this box can get delivered and sit on my porch for a few days. So I'll just hold on to the box. I'll just, you know, just shoot me a message when you get back in town and, then I'll get it mailed out right away for you. So that way, you know, the box isn't sitting around.
Well, you did that for me too when I was deployed.
Yeah.
I got back and he hit me up and said, hey man, when are you going to be home? And I gave you the date. And then like 3 days later, I think I had two boxes sitting on my doorstep. So pretty cool. Very, very cool stuff. So what do you see? Where are you going to take Mountain Hunter Box? Where are we going next with it? Where are you going next with it?
Well, I haven't fully decided if I'm either going to do a small box or a quarterly box, which will be a little more money, but, you know, it'll be a lot higher quality items, bigger items, and then you get it, you know, four times a year, quarterly. There's all kinds of things we could do. I thought maybe another thing that's been talked about is maybe a whitetail box for just the for the fall months or the months leading up to that, and not all year, but you know, just during the season.
Right. Now that's a pretty cool idea. Since Mountain Hunter box seems, I mean, the name sounds like it kind of focuses on that Western big game type of deal. Throw some stuff out there for the whitetail guy.
Tree stand hunter.
You know, yeah, little things like that. Whatever, safety harnesses, what, you know, anything that they need. So, well, cool, man. It seems like it's doing well. You're only 6 months in and you're already getting those, you know, outdoor box of number one outdoor box type of accolades. I think that's pretty phenomenal. You're doing something right.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
Definitely. I wanted to also talk to you about your recent hunt that you went on. First year hunting, right?
This
is your first year out in the, not hunting in general. You're a hunter, if I'm
right.
I mean, you're a whitetail hunter guy, turkey hunter, kind of whatever's out there in Indiana.
Yeah.
So, how was your first Colorado elk hunt? I guess let me ask it differently. Leading up to your first backcountry elk hunt, that's kind of what I'm curious about. What sort of planning and preparation did you do as a new guy to get yourself ready for that adventure?
Sure. So, this year was brought on by surprise. So I have been planning an archery elk hunt since I was injured. So since I watched the Born and Raised Guys, I started planning it. And it was going to be an archery hunt with my dad and I and another buddy or two. And, I thought, you know, my old man, he's done so much for me. Why don't I take the time? And, you know, I'll be honest with you, hunting here, I was able to call in his first ever turkey so he can kill that. So that was phenomenal. But aside from that, he's been my mentor through all this and my hunting partner, hunting buddies. So I would love nothing more than be able to give back to him. So I took it upon myself to start doing research. And when I first brought it up to him, he's like, yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, you're going to go elk hunting. Okay, where are you going to get the money? Kind of thing. And after, you know, showing him a few things, and then I sent him the link to a couple of the videos that they were doing on Land of the Free, and he watched those. And he's like, wow, so this is over the counter. I said, yeah. And so I started getting plans together for that, and you're a couple of guys that, you know, I've been part of that Exo Mountain Gear mountain hunting page, and Jeremy runs that, and you've had him on a podcast. And
right.
So those guys reached out to me. One night I was actually building I had some old driftwood, and I was putting together some European mounts on the driftwood, whitetail. And he had messaged me and said, hey, what do you think about coming with us to Colorado for rifle this year? Second rifle. And I thought, whoa. It's like, at this point, I think it was May, June, something. I think it was May because it was a little chilly out. I was in the garage working. And I thought, well, that sounds awesome, but I'm nowhere near ready, I'm thinking to myself. But you know what? I'm not going to pass this opportunity up. So I talked with the wife. That's what I told myself. Let me talk with my wife and find out, you know, ins and outs. So the wife approved it. The job approved it. I was good to go. So immediately, I had the previous few months, I had been going on hikes with a weighted pack. So we've got a lot of National Lakeshore type things close by, type properties close by. And so I throw the pack on, 40 pounds, 50 pounds, nothing heavy, just, you know, a solid amount of weight. And I just go hike the sand dunes and everything else the best that I could, you know. And aside from that, I just started getting gear ready. And the best part about doing the subscription box company is that where there were things that I would need, I would just order those for the boxes and also keep ordering extra for myself.
I think that's cheating.
Yeah, it sure is, but it was awesome. It worked out.
Yeah, man, I'm sure.
It worked out. So then from there on, I just started, I was probably about 60% as far as the stuff that I had. I had boots, I had a pack. So I just needed to get dialed in. Plus I had a lot of the stuff that I used already. When I was younger, we went out and I was doing the, up in Northern Boundary Waters. I've been up there for fishing trips and stuff. So, you know, in my past, I've collected stuff. Of course, all of us have. So I just started digging through the thing, and I'm like, okay, I can use this. Like, you know, some of the things that weren't ideal, but they worked. So that was that. And, once I got dialed into where I was, it was set in stone, I'm going. It was 80 pounds in the pack. You're on a stair climber for 100 flights of stairs. Real light on the leg press and just do as many reps as I could. I think I was up to 150 reps there right towards the end. But just anything I could do, legs and core, I was just really putting them to work, which really paid off.
Yeah, so I've been talking to a couple of the guys that you went with, obviously Jeremy and Jordan, and just kind of asking them how you did physically out there, because I was curious, because I'm a flatlander too out here in San Antonio, and my buddy Neil, who came from, he's out there close to you out in Indiana, and we struggled a little bit, you know, not a terrible amount, but I think it was just more getting winded than it was, at least for me, like physically my muscles were fine, but there was times where I just couldn't get enough air in my lungs. It didn't matter.
Like I left them back at Indiana. Like I didn't, yeah. I didn't take my lungs with me.
Yeah. So that was the struggle for me. And that's something I'm going to definitely address next year going into it. And you know what, dude, I really don't think that you can fully prepare yourself for it. It just takes that couple of days of hammering the mountain and getting it, you know, and then eventually 2 to 3 days in, we were all good. Everybody was good and we were hiking up the trail. So, anyway, sorry, little tangent there.
That's right.
So as far as going out, I mean, you didn't have much time to build any expectations, but what did you kind of in your mind, what were you building your thoughts and expectations for Colorado?
So, I'm just going to throw this out there. The videos that I've watched from these guys, you know, Born and Raised guys, Pure Elevation guys, they don't quite put the perspective on things until when you get out there, you then fully understand that, you know, when they say, oh, okay, we just went up and down this mountain. And, you know, I've been to the Smokies, and I thought I kind of understood. But driving, getting into Colorado, and I can tell you that as I was approaching, I could see what looked like a cloud front coming at me. Well, the closer I got, I realized that those were some mountaintops. And I thought, oh man, I should be there in 20, 30 minutes. But it was like hour and a half, 2 hours before I even got up to them, let alone driving in them.
Right.
And I can tell you, I was awestruck. Like, I was not, for at least an hour or two driving, I was just in shock. And not just by how big they were, but just how gorgeous that country is. It was just, if you've been there, so you know, but if you haven't been there, there's no explaining how amazing it is. It's unreal.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Some of the pictures that I brought back are just, I mean, not
just
only
don't do it.
Yeah, they're just not even now. They're memories that are burned in my mind. But I look at the pictures, and I was showing them to my wife the other day, and I had one of them set as my screensaver on my laptop, and I was like, "Hey, what do you think about that picture?" And she said, "Wow, that's a really nice picture." And I said, she thought it was one of like the auto, you know, the ones that come on the computer, and I was like, "No, I took that. That's from like 9,500 feet or something, you know."
Yeah,
that was kind of a big thing for me too, was getting that first drive that I took into the trail that was It was like down in a valley and looking up at both sides of the mountains and thinking, holy crap, I may be climbing up both of these, you know, like going up one and back down and back up the other one.
Yeah.
And I'm like you, now I watch these YouTube videos and stuff and I laugh and I don't laugh at the people on the videos, I laugh at myself because when you got Randy Newberg on there and Randy Newberg says, well, we're just going to go like two ridges over and look for elk, you know?
Yeah.
And now you're thinking, oh my God, two ridges over.
Yeah.
That's a day right there, you know, and these guys are killing it. They're doing it in like 2 or 3 hours. So, yeah, there's a lot to be said for this, just the size of the country out there for sure.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too was, it became a shocker. Here's the thing. I've listened to so many podcasts and read books about altitude and feelings you get in altitude. So driving in, I hit one of the passes through the mountains. I think it hits right around, the first one hits around 10,000 feet, 10.5, right around there. And I didn't think nothing of it, drove right up. And I'm coming down and it comes back down into some more like plains areas between the mountains. And I see some antelope, large group of antelope. So I thought, I'm going to stop and take some pictures. So I pull off the side of the road and get out of the truck and immediately feel like I drink a bottle of whiskey. Like I'm so dizzy. I couldn't barely stand. I had to grab the side of the truck, which is weird. I didn't feel it while I was driving. I didn't notice it. So I was like, whoa. So I paused for a moment. I leaned on the truck. It's like, I'm getting these pictures one way or the other. So I took the pictures and I went and sat back in the truck. And there was a gas station right down the road. So I pulled in there and I just tilted my head back for a little bit. And I thought, man, I hope this is not any indication of how it's going to be. Because at that point, I think I was at 7,200 feet. So I was getting a little worried. I'm thinking, oh, man, I don't want to, you know, I don't want this to happen before I even start hunting. So about a half hour goes by and I get back on the road. I'm driving. Well, the next pass, I didn't realize it was going to be right around 11,000, maybe a little over 11,000 feet. And I mean, there was probably 4 inches, 5 inches of snow on the ground. It was pretty high up there. And, I was coming down and there was this really deep valley. And this is San Juan area. And it's a really deep valley, and it was had a ton of yellow and greens. It was just gorgeous. So I was like, I got to get a picture of this. Same thing. Now, I got a truck. It wasn't nearly as bad as the first time, but it was there. You know, I could feel it in his hand. Jeez. I'm like, I hope this doesn't happen every time I get up in elevation. So that time, I didn't have to sit long. It went away quite, you know, I kind of dissipated pretty quickly. So I finished the drive. And, that was it. You know, I met the guys that going into a camp, I've talked to these guys 100 times probably before this. You know, we've been in touch quite a bit, but still, it's still the unknown. I don't know who these guys are. I don't know how they hunt. And that, you know, back home, I'm really particular who I hunt with. The same thing with a lot of guys at home at West. You know, you have a certain style. You don't want to butt heads with guys. Ethics comes into question when you're hunting with other people. Things like that. So it's always the unknown. But, you know, I rolled in and, man, George and Jeremy, those dudes, can't say enough about them, you know, welcome me. And just what a great group of guys.
You were in good company for sure, man. Jeremy's a super cool guy. I got the opportunity to hunt with Jordan for about a day and a half when I was out there. So that was cool. He's a super good guy, man. And then you got to hunt with Chris and his dad too. And
yeah.
I'm sure we'll talk about that here shortly. So that was Chris Horton from Elk Addicts. And, that was sort of a last minute. Like Chris hadn't killed anything yet this year and was looking for somebody to go hunting with. And Jeremy hit him up, you know, him and Jeremy know each other a little bit.
Yeah.
Jeremy hit him up and said, we're going to Colorado. And Chris said, okay, I'm going too. And, yeah. So that was pretty cool, man. You guys had the opportunity to hunt with him and his dad.
Yeah, he actually messaged me. Jeremy messaged me and he asked, he said, do you care if anybody else comes along? And I thought, what are you guys going to meet for? I'm a guest, you know, but I thought it was kind of neat that he asked me. I was like, look, I don't care who goes. I'm just there to help. You know, with this trip in mind, my only thought was, I'm going to learn. I'm not going, yeah, sure, I'm going to buy a tag and I don't want to kill an elk, but that was on the back of my mind. I really, that's not what I went there for. I went there for the experience, to get boots on the ground, to understand things better, to understand what it's like to throw some meat in the pack and struggle. It's just, those are the things that, the reasons why I wanted to go. I wanted to learn from guys that have been there and done that. Even if it was 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, you know, and in my mind, the more the merrier, the more guys there, the more I can learn from and the more I can watch. So I thought it was really awesome that, you know, Chris and his dad came along, because those two guys were, I can't say enough good things about those two guys either, because they were just really awesome to be around and really good hunting partners.
Yeah. Well, I think you were definitely a good company for the entirety of the hunt, but I kind of want to get down into the good stuff, man. I'd like for you to tell me about the hunt, like the first few days.
Certainly.
Sure. So, I arrived and, we stayed at Jordan's house the first night. We went into the mountains that next morning. We got a late start. It was the day before season. It was that Friday. And, they already had camp set up before I got there. Well, somewhat. They had tent up and things like that. So anyway, I spent the night, you know, he invited me to the house, got pizza for us, sat down, ate, and passed out, got up at a decent time. I think it was like 8 o'clock in the morning or something, and we hit the road. We went to the mountain, and I was a little worried doing any base camp was going to be at 9,500 feet. I said, okay. So I was a little worried going in, thinking 9,500 feet, man, I hope this isn't going to cause me problems after the drive in, blah, blah, blah. But it was good. You know, I spent all day Friday at camp, we're getting camp set up, get wall tent put up, things like that. And then that evening we went for a quick hike in one of the areas that you guys wanted to, you know, try and get into the first morning. And we ended up actually finding a dead elk that morning, or that evening. It was from, I don't want to say it's from First Rifle. It was picked pretty clean, but you could tell it had been within the last week or so. So anyway, that was a good promising sign that there had been elk there. So me, I'm thinking, you know, I'd gone on the go hunt and on X and all that stuff. And I was really researching from what I knew. And again, from where we were going, I kind of had low expectations, but it wasn't that I didn't really care either way. I went there to have a good time. So the next morning, that night, we just got done eating, which, by the way, the meals in camp, enough about. I was expecting, like, I had packed my meals for 10 days and they were all in a Ziploc bag, you know, freeze-dried mountains, this, that, and the other, trail mix, which I learned real fast, that stuff. You don't want that when you're up in the mountains.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're sitting around the campfire. We had elk barbacoa that night and it was nothing short of awesome. So we're sitting there talking, and Gus had came into camp, and I think you hunted with Gus.
Yep.
So Gus was in the camp, and there ended up being 6 of us. And they were all talking. We were all going to go out together on one big group, and Gus is like, why don't we just split up 2, 2, and 2, and we'll just go. We'll go our separate ways. We'll cover more ground, and we'll get on some elk better. Maybe more guys can get on elk, and then, you know, we can make a better plan for the evening or the next day. And we're like, okay, cool. So Gus is like, well, I'll just take Derek with me since, you know, Jeremy and Jordan are going, and Dave and Chris are going.
So Neil and I coined him Gus the Goat because he's like a dang mountain goat, man.
Yes, I learned that very quickly. So unbeknownst to me, this guy, there's no low gear. I mean, he gets, I got nothing other else to say except for he goes, period. So that morning, everyone's getting ready, and he's like, you ready? Like, he was itching. You know, he's got to go. We're going now. Okay, no problem. Jump in the truck, hit the trailhead, threw the rifle on my shoulder, And I think I made it about 70 yards, and I'm sucking wind. I mean, there's no way around it. I'm thinking, I am not prepared for this. As confident as I was in my working out and in shape and my abilities and all that things, that went out the window instantly. Like, I realized right away that all that, and I'm sure all that helped. I'm not saying it didn't, but because I can't imagine if I hadn't worked out at all what kind of shape I would have been in trying to get up that mountain. But our first hunt that morning was up, and there was no other. I listened to the podcast you did with Neil, and it was very similar. It was up. There was no other way around it. So anyway, he stayed the whole time. He was probably 50 yards in front of me, I'd say. It was about the distance that we kept apart because I just couldn't keep up. He's got long strides. He was just moving. We get to a point where we're at the top of this particular mountain, and he pauses. We're on a road that we just went through this gate opening, and there's a meadow. We get up on this road, but he pauses for a moment. He turns and looks at me, and he gets about half a word out. And at this point, the sun is just starting to come up, so it's breaking day. Daylight has been going on. The sun is about to rise, and he turns to say something to me, and I hear this bugle, and it's only about a couple hundred yards from us, and I can tell you this. Like at that point, I was like, "That was awesome." So I looked at him, thinking, "This is late October, bugle." So you think that was a hunter? He goes, and he explained to me, "No, that was definitely a bull. You could tell by the end of the bugle." I said, "Okay." And he said, "Get in front of me and get down the hill." I said, "All right." So I went. Now, I'm not going to question. So I went. As soon as I crest the top of the hill, I look and I could see he was going to go down a little further and then turn to go in. I crest the top of this hill and I could see down in the meadow, there's four cows. So they're pushing along and they're moving from my right to left. I'm looking down. And right behind him is a spike. He pops out from behind this giant pine. He's probably 100 yards from me. And he is looking dead at me. So I don't know if he caught me when I was coming over the top or what, but he's locked on. What I learned real quick is, you know, the spikes, they don't see something and run away. They will stare at you what seems like an hour and just look at you. They don't run. They don't make any noises usually. They just stare. At least these elk, I don't know. So he stared at me for a little while and I snapped my finger at Gus like, "Hey, the elk are over here." And he was only probably 30 yards from me. So he turned, started coming around. And the spike's looking over his shoulder behind him. And I said, "Do you think it was that spike that bugled?" And he goes, "It could have been. But it sounded like a pretty, you know, like a pretty deep bell. Like it may have been an older bull." He's like, "But I don't know for sure." He said, "Sometimes you can't tell." I said, "All right." So I'm watching and I hear him say, "He's legal. That one's legal." And I go, and I'm just thinking, which one? And I keep popped out from behind this pine. Well, in the meantime, I'd seen two cows a little further down to the right. There was an opening in this aspen grove. And two cows and a calf turned and started going up the other side of the mountain. So I think they saw me when I first came along. Well, the bull was pushing those four cows in the meadow, and he sees those other cows turn to go up the hill, and he starts making that turn to start going away. And at this point, he's now at about 200 yards. He said, "Get on him, get on him, get on him." So that's what I did. Now I picked the rifle up, got on a good rest on the tree, put the crosshairs behind his shoulder, squeezed off the first round. And he hunched. And I thought to myself, that's not a good sign. Anytime I've ever shot what I know that as is a gut shot at a whitetail, so I can only assume that's probably what just happened. I don't know that for sure, but he's like, "Oh, you just got him. Good. Send another one." So I fired the second round, and at the second round, he had turned. He was quartered real hard away from me. So I put the crosshairs just in front of his left rear hip because the exit wound would have put out just behind the front right shoulder. So I thought I'd catch liver, lungs, like that. So I fired the second shot, and he spun, by this time he got out to about 300 yards ish, and I fired the third, which I know. Well, I wasn't sure at that time if I'd hit him, and then he got out to about 380, still in the same meadow. And at no point did this elk run. He never ran once. He just walked. He got about 380, and he goes, shoot again. And I did, and I saw the last round, it just went underneath him and hit right by his rear foot. So at this point, I was like, I'm not going to fire any more rounds. I'm iffy at 400. I said, I'm pretty solid at 300, but anything past that, I said, I haven't practiced much of that. I don't want to keep, and I know I had already, put a few rounds in him. So at that point, you're just trying to, speed up the process and hope that you can get him down before he leaves the field. But I don't know, something that far out of my comfort range, I just didn't feel comfortable doing so. And then he was with cows still. They were still around him, and I just, that was it. So he's like, okay, let him go. So he turned and walked straight up that side of that mountain and walked into this other aspen grove. And he kind of, after a little while, just disappeared in the aspens. And I don't even know how to explain to you how I was feeling, because from the moment he bugled and I saw him step out, like I was in such awe. Again, this is something I dreamed about my whole life. So for that to be happening, I never in my life would imagine that I would be able to witness something as awesome as that was, to see that bull pushing those cows across that meadow, the whole thing. I never had time to get nervous. I wasn't nervous during the shot. I don't even think I was shaking that much after, just a little tremble in the hands, which is weird for me because when I shoot a whitetail, I can't stand up. But I think because of the uncertainty of what happened with shots and exactly where I hit him and he didn't fall, I was just so, I don't know. Well, what I learned is after shot one, I rushed so much, I never dialed my scope up. So at shot one, I just picked up the gun, put it on him, and squeezed the trigger. I never dialed the scope up to 9. It was on 4. So that was shot one. For shot two, I was shaking between shot one and shot two. I was having a hard time getting the scope dialed up when I realized, and I got it up to 6. And I didn't want him to get out of the field when he turned, or I didn't want him to get down in the down in the creek because it was pretty steep, and I knew if he got down there, I wouldn't get another shot. So I got it to 6 when I fired the second shot, and then the third and fourth both were on 9 power. But from my past experience whitetail hunting, I've always had a checklist in my brain. Draw my bow, anchor, breathe, pin in the center of the peep, pin on deer, pick a spot, breathe again. You just run the checklist. This happened so fast, like I couldn't even tell you what my brain was doing. I just don't know. So we're standing there, and he's pumped. I'm pumped, but I'm unsure. And he said, well, let's do this. He said, we're going to sit down, have a cup of coffee, blah, blah, blah. So he said, he's going to be dead right in those aspens. I'm like, sweet. So I'm going to take his word for it because I'm so uncertain. I just want to believe, this is a great. So he has his cup of coffee and sit there for a little while, about an hour. And he says, well, let's go down, he's like me, he's got ADD, so his mind's going a mile a minute all the time, and when it comes to elk, his eyes roll back in his head, and he's just, he's a fanatic, and I understand that completely now. So, we get down, and we don't locate blood right away, but I saw when he turned, and even Josh had said, hey, you hit him, I heard 2 rounds hit him for sure, and I saw in the left rear hock, a little forward, I saw a round. I said, well, that was my second shot. He was angling real, he's quartering real hard. So I said, I was trying to shoot for my exit wound. And he's like, well, then if that's the case, he's not going anywhere because he was angling pretty good. And, the angle of shot, if anything, you're going to get liver to add to whatever you did the first time. I was like, okay. So we kept walking, circle, still no blood. So we got to about my last shot were at 380 or whatever it was, where I put it down by his rear foot, and there was a couple drops of blood on the rock. And I thought, oh, man. And that's pretty much how the blood trail was. And probably 3 or 4 hours went by, and we went, we probably went a half mile in about 3 hours. And that's because we were pretty much hunched over, and he was making circles as I was following the blood trail close by, but just trying to pick up where he had left the aspen grove, if he'd got out or whatever. So we got off the top, and we ran out of blood. We looked for quite a while, nothing. Now, mind you, we put on, at this point, I believe Gus had said we put on 9 miles. So we called in for reinforcements. The guys showed up. And what had happened was, while we were waiting for them, Gus had said, why don't we go push into the pines up there? Because it started getting pretty thick timber. So let's push up into the pines and see if maybe we can't pick up blood in the pines where he crossed. All right. So we just got in the pines, started doing giant zigzags back and forth as we're going the rest of the way up the mountain. And he hops over this one log and just lays backwards, throws his hands in the air. I didn't know what to think. I thought maybe he found me. I don't, you know, I didn't know what he saw, but he says, well, we got blood. We got blood. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. You know, I was,
man, talk about a needle in a haystack.
It was in no way in a direction the elk was headed from where we last lost blood. So it was like, it was pure fluke. So, and it was like the smallest speck on a leaf that, where he was going to put his foot when he looked down, and it just happened that he found it. Well, from there we lucked out, because then we started getting into snow. And we would get these patches of snow where his feet were going, so he had blood, there was blood in the snow, and there was blood in his rear hoof, right rear footprint. So the blood was running down his leg. I was like, alright. And from the blood trail earlier, we knew he was bleeding out of both sides. So, I thought, well, maybe something happened. He's just not bleeding. You know, maybe he's still bleeding internally. Maybe, you know, all kinds of stuff is running through my mind at this point. I just shot my first elk ever, and I've been high and low so far in the last hour, probably 20 times. So it got to about 3 p.m. And the sun came out, and the snow melted, and we just lost blood. We lost tracks. We lost blood. Nothing. So, sat down. We ate lunch. Some of the guys kept circling, trying to pick up blood elsewhere. Nothing. So, went back to camp. Went back and met up with everybody else. And the next couple nights, restless. I didn't sleep. You know, I tried to be as ethical as possible. I want to make sure that when I take an animal that it's as everybody, you know, I'd like to think, as everybody thinks, I want this animal to suffer the least. I don't want him to, you know, suffer more than he has to. I want to make a quick, clean kill and do the animal right, you know. So the next couple of days, I was beside myself. I didn't, I thought, there was my opportunity. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so the next day, Dave and I hunted together. And the thought was, we were going to go hunt the same spot. And if he wasn't dead, maybe he'd be back on his cows or looking for his cows. We might be able to pick him up again and finish it, you know. So a couple of us guys, Jeremy and Jordan, hit the top of the mountain on the other side, and they were going to push that whole mountain down into the same meadow. And Dave and I were going to be looking over the meadow. So we sat there all morning, nothing moved. We saw guys on four-wheelers, things like that. You know, the first morning, which I didn't experience, I didn't see anybody the first day, not one other hunter, which was nice. So day two was kind of at about noon, 1 o'clock, we kind of headed back in. And day three, which was Monday, we went to a new spot, and I had a pretty good day. I ended up seeing a really cool cinnamon phase black bear, which I thought was absolutely awesome. I'm sure guys who hunt out west all the time don't really think much about it, but for me to see that, I don't get to see that in Indiana, so.
Yeah, they're not running around all over the place there in Indiana, are they?
So, we'll catch them coming down from Michigan, like during breeding season. Sometimes they'll, you know, you'll get a sow to come down into some of the northern counties up here, but, you know, they'll come down for a month and then they'll go back up north. But, so I see that, and then I end up, that morning walking in there, I think we saw like 20 mule deer. Like, it was pretty cool. Every meadow that we walked through sneaking in the morning, there were mule deer in it. It was pretty cool. And then, it was breaking, it was getting close to dark, and a couple elk came down the side of the hill. It was a spike. It's super long spikes. Really cool looking bull. And a cow. They came out and they fed on past me. And so I'm like, well, this is good. I'm into elk, you know. If nothing else, this is worth it to me. If nothing else, you know, develops out of this whole trip. This right here, between me shooting the elk, and I mean, I know it was a down, but still, the experience and all of it, like, this made the trip worth it. So, still kind of bummed. The next day, Chris and I were going to hunt together. And I knew just from the previous days that Chris is no slack when it comes to having mountain legs, because him and Gus covered, I don't know how much property, but those guys put on the miles the day before, and it was like they were commending each other on the sprints they were doing around stuff. So, going in, I didn't get to eat breakfast that morning. It was a quick, let's get out, let's get on the mountain right away, and I should have stopped and said, let me eat something first before we go. So I had no calories in me that morning, and I knew it right away going to mountain. Even by this day, you know, going in the morning, I was good to go. Let's go. We're going to move. I had no issues. But that morning, I learned real quick what happens if you don't get enough calories. I got shaky. I didn't tell any, you know, I have too much pride for that. But I didn't get shaky until I got to the top, and he was going to keep going. I said, I'm going to come over here and sit where I sat last night, because I saw elk, I saw mule deer, I saw a bear, I saw a coyote. I go, you know, I'm just going to sit here. He's like, okay, I'm going to go down the ridge, blah, blah, blah. So I sat down, fired up the pocket rocket too, which, by the way, I really love that stove. It doesn't boil as fast as jet boils. Takes a little more time. However, with as light and as compact as it is, that's going to be the stove that I run. So, with that, I made the biscuits and gravy, and I could see the storm moving. And now, mind you, the night before, I hunted solo. That whole day, that Monday, I hunted solo. I went by myself. I was a little bummed, you know, and I just kind of want to go off and do my own thing, clear my head. And we were all up on the mountain together, and then we split once we got on top. So I had gotten some real elky-looking timber, you know, lots of sign. Lots of the rubs from the season, lots of snat, lots of tracks in the snow, fresh, the dirt on them, so I knew the elk were in there. We sat down on the one ledge and ate lunch there. And, so anyway, that's when I ended up at that point and watching all that. Well, in the meantime, I didn't realize there was a storm rolling in. Well, this being rolled in with fury. It was a pure lightning storm, and it was nasty. Like, we knew there was some weather coming, but I didn't know to what extent. So it came in, and I get a text from Jeremy saying, get off the mountain. We're coming off the mountain now. And I'm thinking, I'm on myself. I don't know how many to back the truck. I didn't mark it. I looked on my, I never marked the truck when we left. So I'm like, oh, here we go. So I pack up my stuff real quick, throw it on the back, and now it's coming. And I'm in this open meadow that's probably, I don't know, maybe 2,000 yards, half mile. I don't know what it is. It's a long stretch. So I throw this pack on my back. Now, mind you, at this point, this was Tuesday, so I was about 80 miles of hiking in at this point. That's my GPS said. And throw this pack on my back, and I'm going to dead run across this meadow, this opening on this top of this mountain. And I don't know. I know the trend, but I'm thinking, if I got to take this trail back, it's like 5 miles following that trail. I'm screwed. There's no getting off this mountain anytime in the next hour. It's going to be a while.
Yeah, you're not going to beat that storm.
So I just start running, and I think, well, maybe I'll catch up with some of the guys that were over here, like Chris or Dave. And, well, the problem was, too, we were able to text and call every once in a while with this service, but like you know, there's not much service up there. So I get running across this meadow, and I finally, I hear a bugle. And I look at my phone, he's like, hey, I'm a bugle, so you could find me, so we can get back together, so we're safe. So I find Chris, but the running didn't stop there, because now we got to catch his dad. So I learned real quick that I was really concerned that if there was any issues that I wouldn't be able to get off the mountain in time because my lungs weren't in enough shape. But I learned real quick that when there's an issue, your body's going to do what it's got to do to get you where you need to be.
Yeah, it's kind of resilient that way, isn't it?
Yeah. So anyway, the next day I go back to the same spot. I'm sitting there eating my biscuits and gravy, and here comes another storm. And we knew it was going to rain that midday. We were going to try to get in some hunting before the rain came in. So I had a little packable tarp. I threw it up, set it up, got underneath it. It rained for a couple hours, just soft. It never got anything crazy. And it was like it rained so much back and forth. Well, right after Chris had left me, before this rain had started, I don't know if he kicked out or what, but this giant mule deer come flying over the hill with a doe. It was pretty cool. He was huge. Anyway, the rest of the time, I didn't see nothing. Well, I'm sitting under this tarp and the rain stopped, and I hear this, what, and I'm not lying, sounded like the cross between a grizzly bear and a T-Rex. It was the loudest, growliest bellow I've ever heard in my life. And it was two mountains away from what I'm looking at. And I'm like, what the hell is that? I'm watching, and nothing. And I can see quite a few different openings in the trees, and, you know, nothing. And it's getting closer, and it's getting closer. Finally, it's almost in the same basin that I'm in, where there's this opening at the top of the mountain on the other side. And it does it again, and I'm like, what the heck is that? But I don't ever see anything. I'm touching these guys. I'm like, are you guys hearing this? Because they're within an earshot of this thing. If I can hear it, I know these guys can hear it. No, we didn't hear nothing. And I don't think Chris had service because he was in some pretty deep stuff. I was like, huh. And I think Jeremy was texting me once, but check it out. I was like, all right, fine. So that's what I did. And I ended up on the other mountain. It had stopped raining. And I got in some really heavy pines, really thick timber. And I'm walking the top of this mountain, and on the backside of this mountain, it's just a cliff. Like, it just drops straight off, and there's a shelf down below. And I'm on this trail where I made some fresh elk tracks going in on the trail, and there was a set of bear tracks that were fresh. So I'm assuming maybe this bear was following the elk or something. I don't know. But I get on this trail, and I'm watching this shelf as I'm walking along. Kind of watching in front of me. Not really paying attention to my surroundings, because I was here, you know, pay attention to what the heck's going around you. And I get about 100 yards in, and I send a text. And I'm like, hey, if anybody gets this text, I'm going to push this mountaintop, because I knew the other guys were down on the other side. And if anything comes running out, hopefully I push it your way. Just kind of a heads up. So I get about two and a half hours in a stalk in the top of this mountain. It was just this long ridge line. And I look, and I almost stepped on it. I don't know how you don't see a bull elk laying there on the ground, but I almost stepped on this bull laying there dead. Now, I'm a really long way from where, not like extremely, but it's a good shot from where I had shot the bull, you know, opening morning. So it never even dawned on me. So I'm looking at this bull, and the coyotes had got him, and the crows had been on him, and bloated, and I get to examining him, and the bull I shot, you know, he was 5x5, and I knew pretty good of where I'd hit him. And sure enough, after looking at him more, there was a round going in his rear hips coming out just in front of the other side, and there was another round. So the first shot I took, I hit liver stomach area. I didn't want to open him up to see exactly, you know, which one I got into. He teased me so bad.
Well,
it was just.
Why not? Why did you want to open it up?
Well, let's just put it this way. When I was a kid, a friend of my father's hit a buck going in hunting one morning, and he decided that he was going to take it, he's going to gut it and take it home, because still half of the buck was good. And this thing looked like a circus balloon. It was probably 20 degrees, and he poked a knife in that deer, and I'll never forget that 300-pound man hunched over this deer, just puking his brains out when that gas hit him in the face. So since then, I don't want any lessons learned on my own. I'll learn from his lesson. Like, there's just certain things I'd rather not venture into. And,
yeah.
But once I learned it was my bull, I was almost in tears. I want to make sure that everything is done as humanely as possible. I want to do the animal justice. You know, that's just the way it is. And to know that I couldn't use any of that elk. And I know the mountain lions and bears and things are going to get them. I know it. But if an animal's going to die at my hands, I want to be able to utilize every part of that animal that I can. I mean, it's just, I think that's how we all should be, you know?
Yeah, so, I agree. I'm sure that's really frustrating, man, because, I mean, that's really the goal. The goal isn't the mount that you put on the wall.
No.
The goal is the freezer that's full.
Like you had said, I would have been happy with a cow tag. If they would have offered it, that's what I would have purchased. I wouldn't purchase a bull pig. And I'm not saying I wouldn't kill a bull, because everybody wants a 350-inch bull on their wall. But I wanted elk meat. That's what I wanted on the whole thing. But don't get me wrong. When I found that elk, I was also, part of me was on level 1,000. Once I figured out it was the elk I shot that I found. Well, here was the second problem. The next problem, I guess I should say. I had zero service. I had zero service on my phone, no service. So I grabbed my Garmin, my InReach. And I slide it out of the pouch. I go to hit to send a personal message to the guys that I knew their InReach channels. And my InReach goes bloop, 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 battery dead. So I don't know what happened. Because I had that thing charging, so maybe it just wasn't connected all the way. But, so now my Garmin's dead. My phone is no service. So now I've got no way to contact these guys. And I'm quite a ways away. So I was like, well, I was going to have somebody come over, give me a hand, getting the head off him. So I said, screw it. I just dropped the pack and went to work. You know, got his head off, got him skinned out, and tagged him. You know, it's the right thing to do, no matter what. And that's the thing that I'll always do. I wish there would have been a better outcome to that, but I can't complain, you know, with what happened. I mean, it's part of it. It's part of hunting, I know. And I'm extremely thankful that I was able to harvest a bull, you know, and that I was able to recover it, you know. I don't know. He was quite a few miles from where I shot him, so I don't know exactly, but he was quite shot, quite a distance, so.
Yeah, I think that's pretty awesome, man. You guys stuck to it, and I don't think you touched it, but I've talked to Jeremy about this too. And Jeremy said there wasn't a single day in between the time that you shot that thing and the time that you found it that everybody wasn't looking for that bull. Everybody in camp, regardless if they were hunting, everybody was still looking for that bull, and they were still looking for blood for the entirety of the trip. And that's what I think is awesome, is that after 5, 6, 7 hours of tracking and the snow melted and you lost the blood, that everybody says, you know what, you can shoot something else tomorrow. I think what's ethical and what is right is that search continued day after day after day. So,
yeah,
absolutely, man, there's a reason to go home and be proud of everything, you know?
And yeah.
Especially,
So you got a 5x5 on the wall, right?
Yeah, so I got him home and
soon to be on the wall.
I boiled him for quite a few hours. So what the guys are telling me is, like, just take the car wash. You know, the pressure wash your car wash, and just, you know, once you've boiled it for a while, and it'll all wash right off. I'm like, okay, that sounds like a good idea. I've never done that with the whitetail. I just boil them, and usually you scrape them clean pretty good, and then throw them, you boil them for a while, and they come out pretty clean. So I boiled him for a while. He still had a little bit of stuff still on him, and I thought, well, I'll go power wash him. I'll bring him back, boil him a little while longer, and I'll power wash him. And, you know, just a couple hours here and there. So I throw him in the back of the truck. I head over to the car wash. Now, I live outside of town, but the town that I live outside of isn't very big. You know what I mean? So it's not like this super metropolis. You know? So I head into the car wash, and I pop the tailgate, and I drop the head down, and fire up the power washer, and I start washing this thing, and I hit this pocket. I hit the back pocket where the brain's at, that cavity in the skull, and that thing exploded all over me. And I'm covered in brains, and the only thing I could do was laugh. Like, I guess I could be mad about it, but it was funny to me. You know? Maybe that's more than it's brains, but I was like, so here I am laughing. I've got this power washer in my head, this dead elk head below me, and I'm covered in brains. And I look to my left, and this little old lady is looking around the corner, and the look on her face was pure terror. Like she's looking at some homicidal maniac. She didn't say anything. She turned, and she'd only been there a few minutes, so she just started washing her car. She got in her car and drove away. Never said a word. She was, white as paper.
She probably drove straight to the police station and reported.
I was like, I'm surprised. They just called 911. I was like, well, this might be my cue to leave. So I power washed just a few more seconds. I threw the head back in the truck, and I went back home and started boiling again.
That's funny, man. That poor little old lady, she's probably still terrified. Still
nightmares.
That car wash again.
Yeah.
That's good, man. Hey, so as far as the hunt goes, this being your first year, obviously, not an expert, want to be an expert, but not there yet. What is a couple of things that you think is important that for guys like me and you, that this was the first year, and, what's your lessons learned? Like, what do you want new guys to take away from your experience?
Well, I guess when it boils down to the hunt itself, take your time. Most of the guys that have hunted before, even if it's not elk, know. There's a process. And stick with what you know. Because it's really, aside from the terrain and the way you call elk and things like that, it's still hunting. And you're still hunting big game. It's very similar. If you stick to your what you know, as far as, some of the tactics that you use. Some of the tactics do work that you would use for whitetail hunt for elk. The way you check areas, the way you follow drainages or pinch points, things like that. Hey, one thing I would say that might help is that when you're going into this, we were saying, we're going to pack in for 10 days and 7 miles in, and that's how we're going to hunt. And I don't see that being realistic for anybody's first time. And I'm not saying you can't do that, because I'm sure there are guys that can, and I'm not saying that I can't. But if you wanted a more enjoyable experience and to take it all in, my recommendation is set up a camp by the truck or whatever, even if it's a mile in. So, be realistic. Hunt a few days, come out, shower, grab a bite to eat. Hunt a few more days. Even if you don't do that, just come out to the truck, get rejuvenated, repack, readjust. I'll tell you one thing. If I would have packed in 5 miles the first day, I would have been, well, I don't know how miserable I would have been, but day one, I was packed for that, and I didn't think to readjust my pack for day hunting around. So day one, when I walked all those miles looking for this bull, I had a 50-pound pack on my back. So this wasn't like, all these other guys are like, man, these guys, I don't know how they do this. Well, Gus, he wasn't hunting, so he didn't have a ton of stuff. But those guys had already adjusted their packs to 20 pounds, 15 pounds, just throwing basics in there, where I had pretty much, aside from my tent, the whole camp on my back. So I would say make sure that you prepare for the hunt that you are doing per day. You know, just go through your pack each day. And again, you know, the 10-day thing was my, oh, I'm going 10 days, I'm doing this. Which, I don't doubt that the guys that I was with could do that without, you know, without the drop of a hat. They would go and do it. But for me personally, coming from this being a new experience, that was something that I'm glad that we were able to hunt from base camp and, you know, just branch out from there. That was a smart move.
Yeah, we, very similar experience because we were going in, I want to say the original camp that we had planned on hitting was about 4 miles in.
Yeah.
And we were going to set that up. And I mean, if anybody's listened to the podcast that I did with Gus and Neil, we weren't able to do that. And we ended up setting up a camp with the trucks. And we had a blast because we would go back to the trucks every night and we would sit there and we would cook good food. We had a running little creek that was right there. We refilled all of our water. There was never really any concern about food, water, or, you know, shelter or any of those major things. We hunted with 20-pound packs. And I'm with you, man. I think that first year, there's no reason why anybody shouldn't try to hunt right there from the trucks. In fact, the encounters that we had with elk were, one of them was about 3 miles from the truck. Honestly, like, as a crow flies, it was about 3/4 of a mile from the truck.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's probably from where the camp was to where I shot the elk. It wasn't very far. In fact, we drove further to the trailhead to come back to where, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I get what you're saying. I just think it's a smart move.
I will say that I know it was very comforting for me to know that I could get out of my tent and go to my truck and just kind of sort through my stuff and get myself ready for the day.
So yes.
That was pretty nice.
Yeah,
well, with that, brother, I think we'll wrap it up. How can people get, well, first off, how do people get a hold of you? And then secondly, how do people go and buy the Mountain Hunter Box?
Okay. So Instagram, Mountain Hunter Box, Facebook, Mountain Hunter Box. Pretty simple stuff. Their website, themountainhunterbox.com. So if you're looking, you can either sign up for month to month, 3 months, 6 months, or 12 months. You can do it as a gift so it doesn't renew. If you want to do month to month and just purchase 1 month, you can use it as a gift to yourself. You can try it out that way. If you want, you know, sign up for a 3 month, that's okay too. Sign up. Get it for 3 months and either cancel or you can sign it as a gift so you only get it for 3 months. Or, you know, any of the subscriptions, obviously they renew after 3 months, 6 months, unless you do it as like a gift. Because, well, the subscriptions, that's how it works. But, yeah, you just go on there and, you know, pick what subscription you want. And, we're getting ready to ship out our rifle hunting box. So the next box will ship around the 4th of December. So that one's going to be packed with, it's going to be a higher value. I'm going to try to go well over what the other boxes were being in the month of December and more of like a gift from me to my subscribers trying to, you know, make the box a little worth a little more.
Nice. Is there a new rifle in the Rifle Hunter box?
I wish. I'd sign up myself.
Yeah, right. Twice.
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool, man. And then, so are you going to do a discount code for all the rookies that are listening today?
Yeah, we'll do 15% off. Just use the coupon code rookies.
That's fantastic, dude. I'm sure people will, I hope people do. After listening to this, and then I know I got some reviews on different products that you've sent out in the boxes
I'll be putting out on YouTube when I start all that stuff up. Hopefully we push some rookies your way to get the Mountain Hunter box, man. It really is a good way to get a lot of these little products because I didn't carry another knife with me. I carried an Outdoor Edge. That was mine. But now, you know, now I have this other one that I got that I've got a spare, I've got a backup, but it's such a fantastic little knife and comes in the box. It's good to go.
Well, I appreciate it, and I appreciate you having me on.
You bet, buddy. I appreciate you coming on. So thanks for telling your story. And if you ever see that little old lady again, you may just go up and give her a hug. She might need that.
I don't think she let me get that close.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. So right on, man. Well, we'll talk to you later. Thanks for coming on.
All right, thanks.
Yeah.
Well, thank you to Derek for coming on and talking his story. I really, really wanted to get with Derek and I wanted to talk about those decisions that had to be made after he shot that elk and then just the constant search that continued afterwards. So I commend him and I commend all the guys that were out there that week for not giving up and for consistently searching for that downed animal. I'm so glad that he was able to find it. And I can't wait to see the mount when he gets it mounted up. I'm sure it's going to look good. It's a real good looking 5x5 bull. So it'll be nice to see that. So thanks, Derek, for coming on, sharing your story. Also wanted to thank you for the 10% off discount code rookies on the Mountain Hunter box. Now also keep in mind that that's on a one box purchase. If you just want to purchase a single box, it's 15% off. So thanks for that. Coming up next on the next podcast, we have the Mountain Project guys, and that is Chase Christopher and Kevin Passmore. And they'll be talking about a recent sheep hunt that they did up in the Northwest Territory. And then they talk a little bit about other episodes and hunts that they did for their season 5. And they touch a little bit on their planning and preparation that goes into all of those hunts that they do. Those guys cover a lot of ground and they take a lot of animals. So it's kind of cool to hear how they prep and how they get ready for each one of those hunts that they do. Thanks to Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network for having the Rookies in the Backcountry on as part of the team. And lots of good stuff going on over on backcountryrookies.com. So make sure you check that out. Thanks everybody for listening and come back in 2 weeks and check out Mountain Project. Out of here.